talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Catherine Doyle, Director of Science, Research, and Advocacy for the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS. She joined PAWS in 2012, part of a career spanning some 15 years as an animal welfare professional, much of that time focused strictly on elephants. The timing of today's conversation with Catherine is pegged to the fact that California appears poised to become the first state in the U.S. to outlaw the bullhook, the fireplace poker-like rod that circus trainers and others use to control elephants. And she has worked tirelessly on that ban. She's also consulted on similar efforts to ban the bullhook in other states or counties. We'll hear about that work, get her reading on the current state of captive elephants. She works for one of the two major elephant sanctuaries in the U.S. and more when I speak with Catherine Doyle in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in the show, I'll speak briefly with Sean Monahan, head brewer of Flat 12 Beer Works, an Indianapolis brewery that makes beer for dogs. Spoiler alert, the beer has no alcohol or carbonation. Lastly, I want to mention that 3 weeks from today, October 7th, WMNF's Fall Membership Drive starts. And on that very day, I'll be raising money on Talking Animals for the station. Probably by next week, I'll have information and photos posted on the Talking Animals website at talkinganimals.net about our exclusive premiums or thank you gifts for pledges of various kinds. But I can tell you now, they'll include Talking Animals t-shirts, DVD copies of Sit, Stay, Ride, The Story of America's Sidecar Dogs, the film Flea and I Showed, as a WMNF event. And he'll also be offering some copies on his great show, The Monday It's the Music. We also, of course, will have the week-long stay in the Kauai Condo, count them two, mind-blowing prints by the phenomenal underwater photographer Goog, special tickets to shows, and more. If you'd like to give us a head start, you can find the Talking Animals page on WMNF.org. You can contribute to our tip jar there, or go to the Talking Animals Radio Show Facebook page, and there's a Donate Now button there, or email me during today's show at DJ@WMNF.org, and I'll be happy to help you with your donation on behalf of Talking Animals. Boy, will I. Right now, though, let's turn to discussing bullhook bans and what we can do to help implement those bans and other aspects in the realm of captive elephants with Catherine Doyle. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Catherine Doyle back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. I was looking back earlier this morning. I think it was some 6 years or so ago that you were on the show, working at that point for another organization. But I think we first crossed paths a dozen or so years ago at a conference presented by PAWS. Though this was obviously before you were working for PAWS. So your passion for elephants and their welfare has been apparent for many, many moons. But what's less apparent, I guess, to me is why. Why do you care about elephants the way you do?
Why do I care about elephants the way I do? Okay, we'll start off with the big questions, huh?
Yeah, for sure. The big philosophical ones, yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, I think it's just the fact that elephants are just, you know, they're just these amazing, you know, animals that are just, you know, highly sensitive, you know, capable of this wide range of emotions, you know, they're self-aware, and I was just, you know, very interested in working with them, and partially, too, because at that time, there was really little interest among animal advocates in working for captive wildlife, and so I was really attracted to working to this area that was probably least attended to, if you will.
So it sounds like in some ways it was more about filling a void that you perceived rather than like you had this big passionate feelings about elephants per se, at least at the time.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's fair. Well, it's fair to say that, yeah, it was kind of filling the void to begin with. But then the more I learned about elephants, the more I became interested and then involved.
So if we travel back a little bit further than that, what would sort of we see as in terms of putting on the path just generally to be concerned about animal welfare, whether, again, it was later elephants, but just generally to sort of follow that path? What was part of your history? Were animals important growing up, or was this something you developed a little bit later in life?
Yeah, no, actually, I was always interested in animals, that, you know, from a young age. So it was kind of, it was a natural progression for me. Though I have to say, the one thing with elephants that's kind of interesting is I grew up going to two zoos in Chicago area, and I can tell you all sorts of things about other animals that I remember from each of these zoos, but nothing about elephants whatsoever. And I know a lot of times, you know, I hear that, well, you have to go see these animals in order to, you know, to get this interest in them, or, you know, to be able to love them and want to conserve them. And with me, it didn't work that way, for me at least. Like I said, I can tell you nothing about elephants at either zoo that I went to.
So they just didn't strike you even just as a zoo-going person, particularly, because, I mean, for a lot of zoos, which we may circle back to from a different angle, those are sort of one of the marquee animals that draw people in, and why zoos that still have elephants want to keep having elephants on exhibit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you would think that, like I said, would think that I would remember them, but I really don't. So, like I said, my interest in elephants came much later.
So, for the better part of 3 years, you've been PAWS Director of Science, Research, and Advocacy. That sounds like an absolutely sprawling job. describe what you do. What does that really involve?
Well, I like a sprawling job. That's a good way to put it. because I do research, scientific research. I'm doing a long-term behavioral study with our African elephants. I also do studies that look at human relationships, especially keeper relationships with elephants. And then I also work on, you know, the advocacy side of things. And really, the idea for me too is science in the service of advocacy, and to bring, you know, more facts to the advocacy side and more information. So, and on the advocacy side, you know, I've been doing a lot of legislative work, which is, I guess, what we'll be talking about today.
For sure. But it sounds like, just before we get into that what you're very much pursuing is having a scientific research sort of underpinning to the advocacy. So it's not just, hey, here's why this is wrong, or here's why elephants should or shouldn't be doing this or be in this situation, but here's what the research shows. Here's what the science beneath that position. So it's not just kind of chanting and placards, although those are effective too at times, but it sounds like it's much more sort of intellectually minded.
Right, yeah, you could say that, definitely.
And so, well, the research you've been doing, like on the long-term behavior of African elephants, or especially, I'm also interested in the sort of keeper relationships, are those already or destined to be sort of published papers, or what happens with that research that you're conducting?
Yeah, destined to be published papers, for sure, because no one's really published anything about elephants in sanctuary situations.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah, I'm interested in publishing on that. And also, and eventually on keeper-elephant relations, too. That's something that's an ongoing interest of mine. And especially keeper perceptions of those relationships, as well as actually my first work was trying to gauge the elephant perceptions of the relationships with keepers.
Oh, wow. So how, that sounds very,
harder to do.
Yeah. Well, again, for a show that's called Talking Animals, I assume that there was some interviewing of the elephants that went on, but how did you gauge, how can you measure what the elephant's perception was of those keeper relationships? That seems really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I was actually using, auditory cues and olfactory cues. So without getting into like the whole explanation, but you know, basically looking at the ways that, you know, elephants, the senses they would actually use, the sense of smell, for example, in identifying or associating, you know, a smell with a keeper, and well, like I said, it's kind of a lot to get into with that research work, and that's something that's still ongoing.
Okay.
But certainly, yeah, it's an area of interest. But.
Okay, so just one other quick summary, just because I just find this so interesting. So to flip it around, sounds like more of the focus is the other side of that relationship, what the keeper's view and perspective on the elephant is. Is there any just notable highlights or things that emerged so far in that research?
Yeah, actually, I found that there's some maybe a little bit of a breakdown in the perceptions, that there were some differences in the way that keepers looked at other keepers' relationships with the elephants, or how they thought the elephants would think about those keepers in those relationships versus their own. And a lot of times there was kind of a disconnect going on.
Hmm.
And actually that I kind of tie further into, or at least, when you're looking at, say, which we're going to be talking about, you know, the way that different management styles of elephants and how the keepers perceive those relationships. You know, for example, a keeper that's using a bull hook,
yeah,
and or keepers that are maybe keeping an elephant alone, and just how their perceptions, like I said, how there may be, you know, like this disconnect going on, that they think one thing's going on and yet another thing really is.
So it sounds like maybe some of these elephants and keepers need some sort of couples counseling or something to sort out some of their issues. But all right, so let's get to it. So let's discuss Senate Bill 716, which, if signed by Governor Jerry Brown, would make California the first state in the country to outlaw the bull hook. So although Los Angeles and Oakland had already outlawed the bull hook, in California and San Francisco has banned all wild animal performances, if I'm not mistaken, still, this seems to be on the precipice of a pretty historic moment. And I know you worked extremely hard on it, as did others. Tell us about the bill and tell us what went into getting the bill to the point where it's now sitting on Governor Brown's desk.
Okay, well, you know, the bill's pretty straightforward. It's, you know, it would ban the use of the bull hook entirely. In fact, what it really does, it amends existing law. We actually have an animal protection law here in California that lists different techniques or different practices that, you know, once were considered to be acceptable and no longer are. And when that law was put into effect, the bull hook wasn't included at that time because there really wasn't an alternative then. And things have simply changed. You know, we now have what's called protected contact training, which is based on positive reinforcement. And that's what we use at the sanctuary. That's what every ADA-accredited zoo in California uses now. And we just felt it was time to, you know, get rid of this archaic, you know, weapon that's used to control elephants through fear and pain.
I think for anybody who's listening, who, I mean, I've certainly posted stuff, and I think pictures are pretty widely available. But again, just people listening who are not necessarily clear on what we're talking about, it's if you've gone to the circus or otherwise seen something that looks like a long rod that often describes sort of a fireplace poker-like rod that trainers, quote-unquote, use to control the elephants and keep them in line or get the behaviors that they want to get. So that's what we're talking about, and that's what's now just hopefully on the verge of being entirely outlawed in California. What sort of opposition was there along the way to getting the bill to this stage?
Actually, there is not a lot of opposition to it.
Okay.
The beauty of the process.
Yeah.
There are only two exhibitors in California that are still using bullhooks. So obviously opposition, you know, came from them. But otherwise, I mean, you're talking, you know, the support we've had in the legislature and passing this has been, first of all, it's been strongly bipartisan. And, you know, you're talking about we passed the Senate 29-7, the Assembly 58-7. So, you know, these were some big numbers there. So, and also our legislators here in California were receiving, you know, a lot of emails, you know, phone calls from people in California who were in support of banning bullhooks.
So other than people that, legislators that just aren't either hearing from their constituents or just weren't educated, I mean, it sounds like it's pretty lopsided. And so at this point, people just sort of realize, hey, the bullhook's time, if it was ever here, has come and gone.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. Well, and it's a matter of, you know, the humane treatment and care of elephants, which I think just across the country, people are, you know, more concerned. We are seeing a change in people's attitude, you know, toward the use and treatment of wild animals and entertainment. And I think it's really, it's just part of that wave. It's not even like we're, you know, the first to be doing this. You know, there are other cities and counties around the country,
sure,
who have, you know, passed bans on the use of bullhooks. But I think certainly in California, first passing the bullhook ban in Los Angeles and then Oakland created momentum towards, you know, the statewide bill.
And just to back up a little bit, what are the two exhibitors in California that still use bull hooks and therefore were in opposition to this bill advancing?
There's one place in was it near Salinas, I think, that it has a small kind of roadside zoo.
Mm.
And they were in opposition. They have elephants there. And quite honestly, there's no reason they cannot make the transition into protected contact. No reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then there is Have Trunkle Travel, which uses elephants for rides and for, performances. And, of course, they use bull hooks, so they are opposing it.
Yeah. And Have Trunkle Travel, when I still lived in California, down the road a piece, in fact, from our house, was where the Orange County Fair was. And I haunted by, I don't know, hopefully it's not still happening, but it seemed like just for a brief window, you would walk, one of the gates you would actually walk in, right there would be elephant rides. And I think that was Have Trunkle Travel's elephant.
Yeah, probably
and,
was. Well, you'll be happy to know there's no county fair in California now that does elephant rides.
Okay, good. I kept thinking they were sort of one by one ruled out, and so I would hope that, because that, boy, talk about a depressing way to step into the fair. It's like, oh,
yeah.
My God, yikes. But and also, I guess it should be noted, too, that they provide elephants sometimes for TV, film, and Hollywood stuff.
Yeah,
so it sounds like with how the legislators feel and how sort of lopsided this has been, that would it be right to say you have tremendous optimism about Governor Brown signing this into law?
Sure, we're optimistic, but, you never... until it's actually signed, I'm going to be on pins and needles.
Right. So one thing related to that, I think at least I understood that the people who wanted to urge Governor Brown to sign the bill don't necessarily have to be California residents to do so. Is that correct, Catherine? Or?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay.
They would like to hear from California residents, of course.
Right. But if they're getting a phone call or even an email, that isn't necessarily clear unless someone just happens to say, hey, I'm writing you from Florida or whatever. But because I'm just thinking that I know that the phone number for people to urge Governor Brown to sign it is 916-445-2841. And I think people can just write a regular letter through the good old-fashioned U.S. mail. And is all that information, including the email? Because I know the email is a little bit involved as a link. Is that all?
It's an online form that they use.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is just Google, Governor Brown's office.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. So anybody listening now feels like, hey, let's just make sure we don't leave anything to chance, and we can help support this effort too. There's no reason people couldn't call or email or send a letter quickly. Because I guess he has till October, if I'm not mistaken. I think you told me the other day.
11th.
Yeah. So there's still time, but the more the merrier. And I just think we want to pile on here if at all possible. So.
Yeah, and also people can go to the PAWS website. That's www.pawsweb.org, PAWSWEB.
Yeah,
.org.
That's what I was wondering, if there might be a little location there where people could get all that information to figure out the way they would like to contact Governor Brown and urge him to sign it. So then here's the question: is what really how is that monitored or enforced? Let's say that Governor Brown does sign it, so now it's a statewide ban. What happens then, either with these exhibitors or others who might be traveling to California from elsewhere? How does that get enforced?
Well, first of all, the law goes into effect and would go into effect in 2018. And I'd say the largest exhibitor that comes in would be, the Ringling Brothers Circus. And they've, announced that they're going to phase out elephants by 2018. Really, other than that, there aren't a lot of people exhibiting elephants in California. So I really don't see that enforcement's going to be an issue. And then plus, most, exhibitors that are using bullhooks right now, for example, Have Trunkle Travel would have 2 years to make a change and to retool their business model so that they can humanely handle elephants.
So I guess the thought is, here's the law, again, assuming Governor Brown signs it, and then there's two-plus years for people who still are using bullhooks to make the switch to another form of training, controlling whatever, their elephants.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, then I guess they could still do what they do in California. And if for whatever reason they can't, then they just can't function in California. And if they did come in, or they did do performances, I guess they would quickly be discovered? And then is there some sort of huge fine if that were to happen, or?
No, I don't think it's a huge fine.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay.
But, I mean, I think it's really more the idea because exhibitors have repeatedly told legislators and told the public that they cannot, you know, bring elephants without bullhooks. So, and you know, and I believe that's true, that they can't do that. You know, it's it would be unsafe for them and a liability issue with the public.
Well, let folks know, by the way, if you're just tuning in, this is Talking Animals with Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Catherine Doyle, director of, I got to get the whole title in, I want to make sure I get it correct, Science, Research, and Advocacy at the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS. We're discussing a pending bullhook ban in California that, if signed by the governor there, Governor Brown, would be historic. It would be the first state in the nation to implement such a law. I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Catherine, so what sort of ripple effect might this have? I mean, again, there's already counties and places dotted across the U.S., but if California does indeed become the first state to outlaw, posing a statewide ban on bullhooks, what are your thoughts on other states following suit?
Well, I think definitely that could happen. There have been other states that have actually introduced the idea, you know, introduced a bill. And a lot of legislators, they don't want to be the first to do something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think certainly passing a statewide bill here would have the effect then of hopefully encouraging some other states to move forward, because then they wouldn't be the first one to do it.
And what other states, you mentioned some have sort of introduced the idea, at least tentatively. What are some of those states thus far?
Rhode Island has done it, and Massachusetts.
Mm. And I know that you have been traveling around and sort of consulting elsewhere on these very types of bans. Are those the places, or are there other places in addition to those that you've been helping guide folks who want to implement a similar ban?
Well, in Austin, Texas, which has passed a ban now, that I think goes into effect in October. I helped them out on that one. And as far as upcoming bans, I think we'd rather keep that like under our hat for now.
Okay, don't want to spoil anything that might be in the works. Tell us more about, you made a reference to protected contact, which PAWS and again, accredited zoos and other facilities use, but what does that really mean? So if we take away the bullhook, not a minute too soon, from people, what happens in terms of caring for, feeding, veterinary care, etc., for elephants? What exactly is protected contact?
Okay, well, protected contact, like I said, is training that's based in, you know, positive reinforcement techniques, and also the keepers work with the elephants through a protective barrier. And using, in, you know, in this method, for example, at PAWS, you know, we're able to provide all the, you know, husbandry that these elephants need, necessary veterinary treatments, and, you know, and pretty much, I mean, we can provide all the care, you know, that an elephant needs. And like I said, not only are the zoos in California all using protected contact, but the Association of Zoos and Aquariums has mandated that that keepers can no longer share the same space with elephants, and except for, you know, specific, you know, there are specific exceptions. But really, so what this has done is also kind of steered zoos toward using more protected contact, you know, techniques, positive reinforcement techniques. And actually, and that was put into place because there had been keepers that were killed and seriously injured by elephants. So that was kind of an occupational safety policy that they put into place. I think the best way to think about it, though, is with a bullhook, it's negative reinforcement. It's something that the elephant wants to stay away from and avoid. They pull away from the bullhook because they know it hurts. And in, like I said, you have the elephant moving away. And in protected contact, what we do is we use something called a target pole. It's a long, you know, it's a pole with a very soft end to it. And the elephants are actually trained to come to the target and to touch the target, say with their foot or with their ear or with their side, and then they're rewarded, you know, they're encouraged, gentle words of praise, and so, like I said, you have kind of two, you know, opposite things going on here. And in fact, we have one elephant who did not, the keepers, when he was at a facility where they were using bullhook, they weren't actually able to provide the husbandry and care that he needed. And at PAWS, using protected contact, we're able to do everything with him. And part of it, too, is, you know, it's voluntary for the elephants. They do it because they want to do it, and, you know, and because, you know, it's a food reward for them. which they enjoy. So, all the way around, it's more humane, better for the elephants.
Yeah, I was going to ask before you mentioned this one elephant, and it's the, I guess overall might be an important question, is if when elephants that, say, have been in circuses come to you or somewhere else that does use protected contact, but previously their only experience had been the bull hook, what's that transition like? I mean, is there a rough timetable? I'm sure to some degree it's elephant by elephant, but how is that to kind of shift them from the bull hook world that they've known into the protected contact world?
As far as I think timetable, like you said, it really is elephant by elephant. But, like I said, in the instance of this one, male elephant of ours, I mean, I think, what's important is it just shows, it certainly allows elephants to behave, to relax more, for one.
Yeah.
Because they're not really under the threat constantly of physical punishment.
Sure.
And so they're able to, to engage in more natural behaviors. But also, like I said, they're willingly engaging, with the keepers.
Yeah.
They're willingly engaging in the training. And I think that's something, like I said, it really doesn't, take very long before they get the idea that they're not going to be hurt.
Yeah.
And, for some elephants, it does take longer than others because elephants, they've all had different experiences. And, but I think, so really, it may be a matter of months to retrain them into protected contact, but really the work is getting their trust again.
Sure. Well,
that
again,
it take much longer.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If an elephant has had decades of just knowing life under the threat of the bull hook, I'm sure it would take some time before he or she could relax into the notion of no bull hook anymore. And one thing you said too along the way, which I think is also really important, just generally, is that goes on at Paws and other sort of first rank facilities, is that the elephants are sort of always given a choice. Like they're never really forced to do anything in particular. Is that assessment correct? Or
yeah, they voluntarily engage in the training. Definitely.
Yeah. But I mean, just even generally, like if they want to be in the barn that day, or if they want to go all the way out and not even come in at night, I mean, those kind of choices are all left generally, I think, to the elephant. Isn't that right? Or
we do have certain management, practices in place. For example, bringing, the elephants into the barn at the end of the day.
Oh, okay.
So that's something. Now, our elephants are trained. It isn't, I think sometimes, some people have put this idea out there that, we just let them go into the sanctuary. And that's really not true. I mean, because these elephants are still in captivity. I mean, we don't make any, we are a captive facility. And that is one reason that, we know that elephants need more. And we are certainly providing the best that elephants, I believe, that the best that elephants can have in captivity. Or at least we're trying for that.
Yeah.
And, but the truth is they are still in captivity. And so they are trained and managed.
Yeah, but I think some of that too is the corresponding thing to that too is that whatever life they had before they arrived at Paws or any other sanctuary is, to the extent possible, they are allowed to more fully live like elephants than previously had.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, these elephants are out there foraging when they're out in the habitat. They're out there foraging all day, which is what elephants do.
Yeah.
And certainly able to, they have the, choice of which, elephants they want to be with or not be with, where they want to go into the habitat, what they want to do that day. Are they eating trees? Are they eating grass? I mean, it's just, lots of choices.
Plus water holes. And then also for elephants, that captive elephants often have feet issues and sore limbs. There's quite a nice elephant-sized jacuzzi, I believe, over there at Paws.
Yeah, in our African elephant barn. Yeah, we have a little. Yeah, yeah.
So,
And it helps the elephants to get that weight, especially for elephants that are, arthritic, getting that weight off of their, joints.
Yeah.
And giving them a little bit of relief.
Yeah, so it must be so soothing for them. Yeah, so again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Catherine Doyle, Director of Science, Research, and Advocacy at the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS. If you'd like to ask Catherine a question or offer a comment in our remaining moments, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org. or text 813-433-0885. One of our emailers, first of all, the subject line says, thank you for your work, pause, big exclamation mark. Just inside it says, for your guest, have you seen a difference in people's perception about exhibiting elephants on a national level?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, I think the very fact that we're seeing, you know, legislation being passed in different cities and counties and states now, either, you know, bullhook bans or some of them are prohibitions on the use of any performing wild animals. I think Missoula, Montana, I just read yesterday, has now passed an ordinance that prohibits Wild Animal Act. So, yeah, we are starting to see more of a concern and an interest in action being taken. And the fact that legislators are also, you know, kind of seeing the light on this issue and moving forward with it, I think it's really important.
No, it sounds incredibly encouraging and that there's just wider awareness of what it means for elephants to be in those situations. And in some cases, especially when it comes to something as extreme as bullhook, that people are just saying, hey, no more. I mean, let's pass this ban or let's get this bill happening. We just, no matter what else is going on with those elephants, we can't have the bullhook.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, like I said, it's just the bullhook is outdated. It's an archaic weapon that, with all that we know about elephants today, you know, their sensitivity and intelligence and, you know, their relationship with one another, you know, the fact that they're self-aware. I mean, so elephants can not only anticipate pain to themselves, we believe, but also anticipate pain to other elephants. So even if elephants see another elephant that's struck or, you know, jabbed or stabbed, you know, with the bullhook, they're empathetic animals. They're feeling it as well, and they understand what's going on, and they understand the situation. So, and that's science that has led us, you know, toward this understanding of elephants that tells us that it's just, you know, that we have to make a change, that we cannot keep treating these animals, especially elephants used in entertainment. We just can't keep treating them the same way, that they've been treated for so long.
Well, it's a really interesting point, too, about not just what they see or feel and anticipate themselves, but what they're seeing with their fellow elephants with the bullhook. Just there's so many ways to be wounded, really. So,
physically and psychologically. And I'll tell you, too, this, you know, the bullhook ban here in California has, you know, this effort has had the support of, you know, elephant experts and conservationists around the world. We've also had the support of the entertainment industry here in California. We've had letters that were sent to legislators that have been, you know, signed, like I said, both, on the Hollywood side of things, by more than, you know, 70, you know, different, you know, kind of leading names from all aspects of the entertainment industry, just, you know, from actors to writers to, you know, makeup artists, you know. And then, like I said, and also on the conservation side of things, too, you know, we've had this, you know, incredible support, and really because people, especially within conservation and, the elephant biologists, they really understand that, you know, use of the bullhook and, you know, this kind of control of elephants is really in direct conflict with conservation goals to protect and preserve these animals.
The awareness, it seems to be coming sometimes from a couple different angles, but then merging, and just the greater understanding that comes to that is obviously all to the benefit of our pachyderm pals. Catherine, if I were to ask you to provide just sort of an overview in whatever way that you wanted to of captive elephants in the U.S., how would you at least just initially respond?
Overview of captive elephants. What I'd like to, I guess the way I'd respond is I just think the times are changing.
Yeah.
I do think we are seeing, even in zoos, for example, you know, we've been seeing, you know, expansions of exhibits and kind of a different thinking there about elephants. You know, it still needs to go way, 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 way further. But certainly, at least, you know, there are holdouts everywhere. There's holdouts in entertainment. There's holdouts, you know, in the zoo community, too.
Sure.
There are people that still don't want to give up bullhooks. For example, with the Pittsburgh Zoo recently, decided to forego AZA accreditation because they don't want to give up their bullhook.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So rather than be accredited, they have decided to hang on to the bullhook.
My God, that's pretty, I mean, they must be, at this point, especially since what we're talking about is kind of the shift more and more to greater awareness, even at zoos, they must be, I would think, a pretty rare case these days.
Fortunately, those cases are getting to be more rare,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
And but, you know, there's always people, you know, that have resisted change because that's the way they've always done it, and that's
yeah.
the way, you know, they want to continue to do it. And the truth is, you know, I mean, eventually at one point, yeah, at some point, they are going to have to change. But like I said, there are people that are just, you know, hanging on to those bull hooks for as long as they can. And, you know, unfortunately, they just, you know, haven't seen the light yet.
Okay. Well, I see one of the next places where we got to get the statewide bull hook ban in, and then we'll sort of upset things over there at the Pittsburgh Zoo from a legal legislative angle. So, wow, that's really remarkable. Okay. One other quick question, or a couple quick things that have come in by email, Catherine. One is asking, does your guest have an opinion of the, this is in quotes, sanctuary in Central Florida for the retired circus elephants?
I don't know of a sanctuary in Central Florida. I think I know what they're referring to.
Yeah.
But I can't really comment on a facility that I haven't been to myself.
And okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that would be fair, and it's, you know, it would be unprofessional of me.
Okay, I got you. And one other question, which I was going to do anyways, but this is as good a time as any. They're asking to give the bill number again. So, again, this is Senate Bill 716, California Senate Bill 716. And to find out how you could urge Governor Brown to sign that bill, probably the simplest thing would be to go to the PAWS website, pawsweb.org, and there's information about how to phone, email, or just good old snail mail to Governor Brown in support of SB 716. All right, so Catherine, I think we've just about reached the end of the time. We've been speaking with Catherine Doyle from the Performing Animal Welfare Society, or PAWS, and again, the website is pawsweb.org. Catherine, thank you so much for making the time to join us again on Talking Animals and all your great work on behalf of our elephant friends.
Well, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Great. Thank you. In a few minutes, I'll speak with Sean Monahan of Flat 12 Beer Works, an Indianapolis brewery that makes beer for dogs. Right now, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. I've been a longtime fan of Jim Gaffigan, both in and out of the Comedy Corner. Very happy to see his TV Land show do so well and already be renewed for another season. And it was just announced that Gaffigan will be performing later this month for the Pope. Here's a hunk of his piece called I'm a Manatee. It's Jim Gaffigan on today's Comedy Corner. I'm Talking Animals.
One morning, I shot an elephant in my...
I was going to do that earlier, but I decided not to. Okay. Well, Grouch is not so bad either for the Comedy Corner, but here's Jim Gaffigan.
My favorite animal is the manatee, the sea cow. The manatee is endangered with extinction, and I think it's because it's out of shape. It looks like a retired football player. You ever see the manatee on the Discovery Channel? It's always floating around like, I'm bloated. Too much pizza for me. The manatee is also called the sea cow. Sea cow, that sounds like an insult. It's almost as if the manatee was introduced to the ocean, the other animals were like, who's the new guy? The manatee was like, oh, hi, everyone. You can call me the manatee. Yeah, right, sea cow.
Name's manatee.
Sea cow, fat ass.
Quit it.
I'd love to see the manatee on a show like Ricky Lake. Manatee be sitting there like, Ricky, I'm here because I'm endangered. And then one of those mean people in the audience would offer up the advice, yeah, I want to say something to the sea pig. That sea cow, whatever. Sea pig, you a fat seal, you got to get yourself an education and a job. Manatee be like, I live in the ocean. Just so happen you live in the ocean because you ain't got no job. You got to get in Weight Watchers, some kind of program.
I have a layer of blubber to keep my body warm in the water.
Whatever, talk to the hand.
I don't have a hand.
What if a manatee was in the audience? They might laugh, but they'd be crying on the inside. It doesn't look like God tried that hard on the manatee, does it? He's like, all right, blood flip-flops. What the hell? Let's go with a goatee. You know what? I got a golf game. Throw this around Florida. It'll fit in. Hey, I'm from Florida. I don't think God plays golf. I didn't like some of those jokes.
That was Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called I'm a Manatee, taken from his CD, Doing My Time. Now to briefly discuss the beer for dogs that he and his colleagues at Flat 12 Beer Works in Indianapolis unveiled recently. Let's welcome Sean Monahan to Talking Animals. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. How are we doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals today. Let's first just give a little quick summary or overview of Flat 12 Beer Works. What sort of brewery is Flat 12?
Well, Flat 12 is a regional production brewery based out of Indianapolis. We're one of the larger ones in the state, and we have a 5-state distribution ring. We try to do a lot of creative stuff all the time, and that kind of led us down the road to dog beer.
All right, so yeah, let's get right into it. How did the idea for the beer for dogs come about?
Well, honestly, it was myself. I'm the director of brewery operations and brewmaster here, as well as my team. The boss was out of town, so we were thinking of something fun that we could do that wouldn't get us in too much trouble. We all have dogs here at Flat 12. Dogs are actually welcome in the brewery. They hang out on the patio and in the bar. So we wanted to kind of give something back to our loyal companions and the customers that come in. So it was a natural fit.
And as I noted earlier in the show, and we should probably quickly note here, that this beer, of course, has no alcohol or carbonation. But what does it have? What are the ingredients for the special dog beer brew?
Yeah, like you said, alcohol, carbonation, and hop are really bad for dogs. So you definitely don't want to be giving dogs regular beer. So what we did is removed all of that. During the brewing process, there's a step where we are extracting sugar liquid, which we call wort, off of the grain. Now, typically, we'll put all of that sugar liquid into the kettle and continue on the process. But with the dog beer, we take the what we call final runnings. There's not a lot of sugar. It's mostly grain water. We take that, and then we boil it and kind of steep it, kind of making a stock using sweet potatoes, carrots, pumpkin seed flour, some brewer's yeast that gets killed off in the boil, as well as some meat bones that we get from a artisanal butcher shop across the street.
Wow. Sounds
so
like it can't...
put all that together.
Yeah. Sounds like a can't-miss recipe.
Oh, it's great. They love it. Can't get enough of it.
And did you... The first time you made a batch, I mean, did the dogs, of course, probably loved it regardless, but I mean, did you tinker and adjust for a subsequent batch, or did you feel like, hey, we have it right off the bat here?
We brew this as ingredients come available. So once the butcher shop has some bones for us and we're in the process of brewing, we kind of throw in different ingredients based on what we have. So the first batch, I taste every beer that leaves the brewery. So I even tasted the dog beer. I gotta be honest with you, it's very brothy. We're basically just making a stock.
Sure.
So I liked it. I got a little miniature schnauzer at home and took it home to him and gave it to him. He really liked it. So then we kind of went through with the same basic recipe for a Heaven After Hell rescue kind of fundraiser that they hosted here at the brewery. That was, I think all the pints that we sold, little dog pints and little dog bowls, we sold them for $1. And then 100% of the proceeds we made off of that went to support the Heaven After Hell rescue program.
Well, that was one of the many things I liked about this, is that not only you obviously worked diligently to create the beer for dogs that would work and be delicious and healthy and whatever, but that you unveiled it at a pet adoption event. So I thought, well, that's what better way to sort of introduce that thing. So was that sort of a one-off though, Sean, or is this regularly available or sort of just for special events, or how are you guys going to handle it?
Well, part of what we wanted to do with this was, continue giving back to the community. We're very community-minded and definitely love animals and working with these researchers or rescue centers.
Yeah.
So the anticipation is to continue to brew this. We brew it in fairly small batches, but if we can keep it going, we'll always have it available for the dogs that come in, and we'll continue donating all the profit or all the proceeds that we get off of that from going back to rescue shelters and so on and so forth.
That's great. Sounds like everybody's got to be happy with that arrangement. So, that's really cool. This has been Sean Monahan from Flat 12 Beer Works in Indianapolis. And Sean, thanks for taking a few moments to speak with us today on Talking Animals about your dog beer. And thanks for all the cool work you're doing with that to help the animal shelter community there.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Duncan.
Okay.
It's been a privilege.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a DVD copy of the acclaimed documentary Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret. Right now, it's time for some animal news and announcements. First of all, just want to give a quick overview. It's coming into the season where animal organizations have big events of one kind or another, indoors and out, including Tuxes and Tails. This is to benefit animals at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. That's their big event, October 17th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Tampa Convention Center. You can find out more by going to humanesocietytampa.org. Coming up the very next day, Stride for Strays. That's the one the Animal Coalition of Tampa has done for many years. I think this is the 15th annual. That'll be, again, the 18th, October 18th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the Channelside Riverwalk area, starting and ending at Ferg's Live Tampa. So you can go to actampa.org to find out more about that. And then looking ahead a little beyond those, Tampa Bay Veg Fest, the 6th annual, is coming up November 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park. And there is a website strictly devoted to that, put on by the Florida Voices for Animals folks, but this has its own website, tampabayvegfest.org. Also coming up tomorrow, in fact, it's all about cats. Denny Mitchell will present a musical and informative tribute to cats throughout history. That's going to be at Safety Harbor Library again tomorrow, September 17th at 6:30 p.m. All About Cats is a performance that educates, entertains, and engages audience about the world's number one pet. I'm just reading what it says here. With proceeds shared with nonprofit animal rescue organizations in the Tampa Bay area. Find out more and where other performances will be held as well. You can go to Meowser. You heard me, meowserproductions.com. meowserproductions.com. One or two, maybe other quick items. You may have heard or read that Ellen DeGeneres has gotten herself into some hot water, sort of the last several years, known as vegan and supporting places, the Gentle Barn, and has her own line of products. Well, I guess she just unveiled a line of shoes that includes leather, so that's caused quite a stir. And then the way the website kind of plays a little bit footsie with that information. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting, surprising situation. On a good news front, though, good news for whales is the Navy agreed, this is from a daily from Honolulu from Associated Press, the Navy agreed to limit its use of sonar and other training that inadvertently harms whales, dolphins, and other marine mammals off Hawaii and California in a settlement with environmental groups that was approved on Monday of this week. The centerpiece of the agreement signed by a federal judge in Honolulu limits or bans mid-frequency active sonar and explosives in specified areas around the Hawaiian Islands and Southern California. Some of the training will continue, but at least there's been a serious reining in of that. So I think that's it for today's animal news and announcements. And time now to play Name That Animal Tune. Listening to Talking Animals, by the way, I'm Duncan Strauss. Show website is talkinganimals.net. And this is a giveaway, Name That Animal Tune. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a DVD copy of Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret, an excellent eye-opening documentary. Filmmakers were past guests on Talking Animals. To the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. I'm going to guess that at least some people will be able to name that animal tune. Meanwhile, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laura is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, September 23rd, with another edition of Talking Animals. I hope in the meantime, you'll consider making an early pledge in support of Talking Animals for the WNF Fall Membership Drive. Again, you can go to WNF.org, find Talking Animals on the schedule, click on that, takes you to the Talking Animals page, and you can just drop a little something in our tip jar, or again, right now, as of recently, the Talking Animals Radio Show Facebook page has a Donate Now button on it, so you can do it that way, or just email us, and we'll help you help us, absolutely. So, I hope you also visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts from past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. It's Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Catch up with you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.